Welcome, everyone.
Yeah.
We're back.
Episode 13, I think.
Woohoo. Go us. Didn't we just celebrate like 5,000 downloads or something? Or 2,000?
Okay. So this is an interesting story.
Okay.
So the guys who host the podcast, Simplecast, I have to think about that now. So they updated their thing the other week. Mm-hmm. And the analytics have gone massively down.
What?
But apparently they're more legit now. But like,
did we have bots listening to us? That's a shame.
But the Russians.
The Russians were listening.
The Russians and Trump supporters.
Well, damn.
We don't want to go down that political route, though.
Well, maybe it's good to have ourselves like knock down a few pegs. Is that the word? You know.
It was definitely more than a few.
Oh.
It was a bit of a gut punch. I've sent them an email. I was like, is this right? Because this is, you know, I've been living a lie for nearly a year now.
I base my daily validation on the statistics Simplecast.
Yeah. I don't do affirmations in front of the mirror. I look at the analytics.
This is the first segue, like complete random rant of the day. I've started listening. So anyone that follows me in general on social media will know I'm a bit of like a business kind of entrepreneurial junkie. And I know that you're like quite similar, Dan, in the sense of, you know, you listen to like the likes of Gary Vee and like, you know, and the like. So I've started listening to this new audiobook at the moment called Financial Freedom by, I think the guy's name is Grant Sabatier. And he's like, 30 or something, and he's like a multimillionaire, and basically his tips for like his tips for getting into like the zone of like, yes, I'm gonna be successful. Instead of meditating every day, open up an Excel spreadsheet and like just take a good hard look at your finances and get yourself in that good frame of mind and you know, tell you a bit like how, you know, people like if you eat healthy, then you're more likely, or if you do exercise, you're more likely to eat healthy because it's kind of like that practice of like, well, I've done the exercise now, I might as well follow through and actually eat healthy. His kind of thing is if you look at your bank balance every day, that will kind of encourage you to not spend money. And I was like, so he calls it his money meditation. And I was like, I've not attempted it yet. But I mean, it's an interesting approach. What's your thoughts on that, Dan?
I mean, it sounds like he hasn't made his money from business. He's just saved up.
Well,
this is what he's done. He's gone and moved into a YMCA, saves living costs there.
Yeah.
You know. It just eats scraps and like, you know, save all the money that I get from work.
Yeah.
Now I'm a millionaire.
Well, I think like, ironically, you're not wrong. Because he talks about, I mean, hello, welcome to VR Side Chats, where we talk about anything but VR. But
that's the intro done.
Yeah. He talks about like there's these different stages to financial freedom. And actually the first, I can't remember how many it is, but the first, I think it might be like four stages, isn't anything to do with actually getting rich. It is kind of already like optimizing what you're already doing. And so he gears it towards people, you know, that have full-time jobs and how can you make the most money. He basically believes that anyone in a full-time job can save up enough money to retire within 10 years. That's his belief. And it's not necessarily by, you know, don't go out and buy coffee every day. It's not his mentality is not scrimping. It's the opposite. Mm-hmm. It's like money is infinite, whereas time is not. Time is really valuable. So actually, and this does tie into kind of VR, because I think I really struggle sometimes with, you know, when there's like a project and it's not quite corporate, you know that they don't necessarily have the biggest budget in the world. And you're like, oh, I really should like slash my day rate for them. But then I'm like, I'm really trying hard to practice this kind of wisdom this year of actually no, because time is more valuable. Time you can't get back. Yeah. You're never going to get back today. Oh, this is now turning into a, this is life advice from Alex Rule. But you know, you're never going to get back that time. Like every second that you spend, like the people listening to this podcast, this is an hour you're never going to get back of your life, my friends.
Don't say it like that. If you listen to your podcast, yeah, sorry, you're wasting your time. This is guys, honestly, we'll get to a point somewhere.
The beauty of a podcast is you can be doing something else whilst listening to it.
Yeah, so that, no, that's true. Yeah. It's like a multitask.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, like his whole thing is, yeah, you should really, really value your time, actually. And if you're in a full-time job, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't just not ask for a pay rise. You shouldn't ask blah, blah. But he came out with this interesting stat that it cost your employer between 40 and 60% of your salary to replace you. So actually, wow, you have a lot of leverage. If you're a good employee, like if you're shit at your job, then yeah, forget it. Like, but if you're really good at what you do, it's actually going to cost them a lot of money to try and replace you. So you have like a lot of leverage to go into your boss and ask for a pay rise. And so, yeah, anyway, I'd highly recommend the book. I'm not going to ramble on any more about it, but very interesting. I can't even remember how it came up. I think you talked about meditation. Back to you, Dan.
I mean, if we went back to it, I'm pretty sure that I didn't start this. I don't think I ever brought up meditation. I'll take off on the team. This is all on me.
Thank you. I'm already excited to listen back to this episode and find out where that came from.
Where it all went wrong. So soon.
Are you gonna do an official opening for us for this? Have you got a little rap for us?
I didn't prepare anything because obviously this is all very last minute.
Yeah.
I liked your little quick one earlier. It's like, oh, by the way, this is the podcast.
When did I?
That's how good it was. Memorable? You forgot about it.
I mean, it does sound like me. To be fair, I did prepare a little something for us. If you would mind to drop me a beat.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. Yes, it's been a month and we're sorry about that, but we're back, me and Dan, with VR5 Chat. In today's episode, we're going to tackle distribution in the VR world. There ain't no easy solution. Word. Beautiful.
Cool. I'm glad I guessed the ending right there. I want to just carry on.
It was almost like we'd rehearsed that. That was fantastic. That was congratulations. Great beat making.
I mean, I'll have to listen to it back because I drowned myself out with my own statements. I didn't really heard bits of the lyrics.
I mean, basically, I was introducing our topic for this week. So,
did you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't hear that.
My beats were so fat.
I couldn't even hear myself. Oh, cool.
Maybe that's the case for the viewers as well. They're like, no, not viewers, listeners. They're like, no, we didn't hear it either. Anyway, we're talking about distribution today, guys.
Yeah.
Dan, VR Hello. Distribution.
See, now this is where I was going to pick your brain, because I think you have more experience in this than I do, as you have a film yourself on Jaunt. I think it depends on what you want to sort of get out of it, I guess. Mm. If you just want views, if that's your aim, then, you know, it's going to be vastly different than if you want to, you know, monetize your content or, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. it. I would say that's the kind of the best starting point is thinking, and also it kind of depends, yeah, when you make this art to begin with, you kind of have to have an idea in mind. If you do want to make money from it, or if you do want substantial amounts of views, or you know the kind of audience you want to get it in front of, you do kind of need an idea in your head around, you know, what channels of distribution you're going to kind of go down. So, I mean, I kind of generally think about it in three. It's kind of overview it as is three separate things. So it's like online, LBE, which means location-based entertainment, or licensing. And by licensing, I mean kind of, that's the one that's a bit aloof, but, you know, stock or training or, you know, licensing it to art galleries and festivals or other creators to use as part of a package or... and yes, obviously, licensing comes under all three of those, I guess. Mm-hmm. But realistically, I think, you know, are you making this for loads and loads of people to see it, in which case you're most likely making it for an online audience. I think we've probably talked about this before in previous episodes, but where we are right now in the VR industry, you, and someone might argue with this, but I would say you either make it for the mass audience, and in doing that you are acknowledging that you're making, and I'm talking specifically about 360 here, but you're making a 360 piece that will most likely not be consumed in a headset, because mm-hmm. to get the mass distribution, obviously you're going to go to YouTube or Facebook. They're going to be your like starting points, and VR, obviously, you know, you're going to go to these big kind of user generated content platforms where you can reach a lot of people, but you have no control over how they're going to see it. And then the other one is that you want a more curated kind of audience to see it, but you're acknowledging that not as many people will see it. And that could change in future, obviously, as headsets get lighter and more accessible and more people have them in the home and more kind of venues have them. But for now, those are kind of the two splits. And I always kind of start with a piece where I think it's going to have a kind of more of an LBE run to begin with. So when I kind of create an original piece, I want it to probably go to festivals first.
Yeah.
So it's kind of having that kind of distribution, basically just going to the kind of VR industry or a kind of people who are already interested in VR art first. And from there, then it will go on to do a kind of like a location-based run. So whether that will be for pop-up VR cinemas or, you know, festivals or, you know, kind of more the wider festival circuit. So Key to Light's played in some really interesting random pop-ups where it's kind of like, what was one of them called? One of them's like, it was really obscure. I can't actually remember the name of it, which is terrible, but it was like this really localized little philosophy pop-up. And it was, you know, it's just like they wanted to do something in VR. Key to Light deals with some interesting kind of like philosophy around like love mm-hmm. and loss. And so it was kind of like used as a catalyst to discuss those kind of subjects. Mm. So it's like those kind of things. Or obviously, you know, VR arcades might want to license your content, that kind of thing. And then that kind of that third tier then, of like licensing it into, oh no, hang on, sorry, wait, what was I even saying? Sorry, I've gone on the right track here. Oh, so you do it for that audience first and then you release online. So then obviously, then yeah, we kind of sought to get it on all of the big kind of distribution networks on the VR headset. So it's on Jaunt, it's on Inception, it's on Iconic Engine, which they also double as like a sales agent for you. So it okay. goes on their platform, but then how that works is they then pitch it to clients. And if for example, one of their clients is, it's not Verizon. What's the other big telecom company in America? I can't remember.
T-Mobile.
Oh, it might be.
Or Sprint.
Oh, maybe it's one of those. It's something like that. Anyway, massive kind of companies like that. And then they pitch your work into them and say, do you want this on your library? And then if they say yes, then Iconic Engine kind of broker the deal for you. Yeah. And then they take a percentage and you get a percentage. Obviously, or, you know, you have it on the kind of the platforms like Jaunt or Inception, those kind of things. And usually, well, Jaunt don't anymore because obviously they've since moved all their attention to AR, so they're not supporting VR anymore, but Inception, for example, would kind of pay you a license fee up front for a certain amount of years, you know, that kind of thing. So those are the kind of the two main splits. Is so you would do to be fair though, actually thinking out loud, god, you can tell we haven't podcasted in a while, I'm like all over the place. bear with me. With Key to Like, we haven't yet, and I don't think we will, put it on YouTube or Facebook, just because that piece was never, I mean, it's mainly because it's outdated now, as in my head, it's like I've got so many other pieces that prefer for people to see now because it's so old. But that's a piece where I really intentionally didn't want people to watch it on mobile. And they might have done, because I know you can watch like Jaunt and things like that on desktop. And I know when my like my dad's like been a proud dad and like talked about it in he works for a university, and when he's talked about it, you know, he's kind of given people the desktop link. And I know friends of mine who have watched it on desktop and things, and I'm like, no, like, tell me and I'll come over with a headset. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, those are the two big kind of splits, I guess.
Nice.
Over to you, Dan. Thoughts on that?
Well, like I say, you have more experience in this than I do, but it's interesting because I'm working on well, kind of started working on a little something with a friend of mine. I don't even know if I should really be talking about it because it's not absolutely set in stone yet. We were just talking about it over the weekend, but a friend of mine, he does a lot of stuff to sort of raise awareness of male suicide and like mental health and stuff. And he's currently crowdfunding a documentary that he's looking to start shooting in June. But I've been speaking to him this weekend about maybe doing like a sort of VR companion piece to that. And again, it's like, it's, and that's why it's interesting what you're saying. It's like, it's one of those things, because it's, you know, quite a big thing. It could be beneficial to, you know, get it in front of as many people as possible.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, I don't think what I have in mind for it, it wouldn't have the same impact if it was viewed on a browser. It's one of those things that would need to be on a headset. But if we monetized it, you know, anything that it might would go to charity, obviously. But I mean, we're early stages yet, just sort of talking about it, but.
Well, and that's an interesting model, isn't it? Because the Kickstarter model and the idea of, you know, creating an idea around, something. So with something like that, the distribution model becomes quite different, and it is almost a little bit easier to kind of build in a bit of a distribution plan, I guess, for something like that. Because, you know, number one, if you've kickstarted something, you've already got a built-in audience. So that's, you know, that's part of your distribution plan, is direct to consumer. So you push it to those viewers. Then, because it's such a specific theme, not only obviously is it documentary based, so therefore you've kind of got all these built-in pockets of, you know, documentary festivals. You could obviously still go after the VR festivals, but you could probably go to wider kind of documentary festivals as well with it. You could then target specific charities that deal with the theme of male suicide and male mental awareness. And you could potentially sell it to them as a piece that they then use. And this is kind of part of that licensing, that third bracket that's not online and it's not LBE, but that third pocket of selling it to, let's call it like selling to a business instead of licensing, because licensing is probably a bit confusing, but selling it to someone else for a different purpose than what you intended. So I've got a friend, Avril, who one of her first 360 pieces, in fact, it might have been her first 360 piece. She's like a traditional filmmaker. One of her pieces.
The Dignitas one, wasn't it? Is it The Last Moments?
Yes, yeah, that's the one. So hers, obviously dealing with the subject of euthanasia. And I know that has obviously had a lot of play in places, and, you know, really amazing. I think it's, you know, shown at the UN or something. It's like, you know, been used in really amazing cases because of the subject matter. So that's what I really love about those kind of projects. And I think that's where I want to move my attention to, is things that kind of move outside of the VR world a little bit. Like, so you're not just doing something to appeal to a VR audience, you're doing something that just happens to be VR, but it's dealing with a specific subject. And so with that, obviously, you've got that kind of that built-in distribution of, you could potentially then take that film to a charity that then uses it in their kind of fundraising material, or they use it, you know, at events where they're trying to raise awareness. You could use it, you know, another distribution plan for that could be, by the way, I hope this is okay. I'm just creating a distribution plan for you.
Please do, save me a job.
So
if you could jot this down in like a Google Doc as well, just send it over, that'd be great.
Could just hear like ferocious typing on the other end, like Dan's taking notes. But you could also target, I'm sure that there would be kind of people whose job it is to go around to specific, maybe even like corporates where they have like well-being days, and there'll be trainers that go around and, you know, they do sessions on things like mental health. It could then form part of their kind of package of content. And again, like VR is so powerful, and it's so something that most people haven't still kind of had much kind of contact with, but it is a really powerful use case. So all of a sudden you've got those kind of avenues to go down. And I would argue like that one, for example, is probably the biggest chance you've got of making a substantial amount of money this early on in VR. Again, people would probably argue with that. You've got the one-off kind of cases of like Spheres and Vestige, you know, pieces that have kind of gone to like the big tier A film festivals and sold for a lot of money. Yeah. But that is like a one in, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's a really rare occurrence. You're more likely to, and that's, you know, with the latest piece that I'm producing, Playing God, that is very much an avenue that we're now looking at, because we found it, we were originally funded by Arts Council, but we're finding it really, you know, just to be candid, we're finding it really difficult to get finishing funds for it. We're in post-production now. We don't need that much money in the scheme of things, but it's absolutely impossible to raise money from the usual VR suspects. So we're now having to think, okay, well, how could this play in a wider distribution plan? You know, who might be interested in this to use in corporate settings? You know, could it plug into some kind of training program? And then that's where you look for your kind of finishing funds, and that's where you look to kind of, you know, to get your content in to distribute. So so that would be like quite a potentially lucrative opportunity, because again, corporate training or training in general is quite it's quite a lucrative sector, I think. So could be quite interesting to kind of plug into to that kind of thing. And then obviously you've got, you know, art galleries and VR arcades and pop-up cinemas and those kind of things, which offer, you know, one-off kind of commission or licensing fee. But the only slight thing with that, and I think one subject that we should probably dig into is I guess why it's so difficult to distribute at the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even just kind of mentioning the pop-up cinema, one of the things I've just finished curating a 6-month pop-up cinema for the BFI here in Leicester. And one of the things that we've kind of reflected on is, you know, it's just not scalable yet, because the headsets are still, even the £200 Oculus Go's, it's still quite expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, in order to have like a 20-person cinema, you've already got to spend, quick maths here, $4,000, is it? $4,000 for 20 headsets?
Yeah, I'm not good at this.
£200.
If you know at home, please get in touch.
Yeah, tweet it. I think it's about $4,000. So you've got to spend $4,000 before you even open the doors to a VR cinema, right?
Hang on, I like that we're sort of talking business here, but then we could work that out.
Just for argument's sake, I'm googling it. It is $4,000.
Just getting straight off the bat, and I'll just cut the rest of that out.
It's four. Okay, we'll pick up from here. It's $4,000. 20 times that's 200.
Wow, that was really quick, Alex.
Thank you. I am a mathematician, producer, person. Wow,
that's so amazing.
It was so fluid. It's almost as if I have a built-in calculator in my mind.
It's like we got Rachel Riley on.
Yeah. So So $4,000 before you even open the doors to like a pop-up VR cinema. And like, this is obviously, we're talking about 360. If you started going down, you know, talking about room scale VR, you know, that's what you can have, maximum 2-3 people going through that at once. Yeah. If someone, you know, how much does that ticket price have to be before you can make your money's worth? And, you know, it's not like a film where you get 200 people in and realistically, it's just it's the cost to license the film, and then it's the cost of the projectors, or, you know, the projectionist, the person that's kind of essentially looking after the fact that it's showing right. So that's 1 to 200 people, you know, one person for 200 people. Whereas in VR, it's like, well, you need someone who really kind of knows what they're doing. Yeah. Like, that was one of the biggest things about the 6 month pop-up, was I found, I didn't quite think beforehand how much it was going to be on me from a technical point of view. Like, if something goes wrong with the headset, like, we had several things where, you know, the films like broke the headsets, or, you know, there was probably only one or two sessions towards the end of the pop-up where at least one headset didn't play up, or, you know, just things like someone pressed a button and it got them out of the app, and, you know, and actually, if you've not got someone that's well-versed in VR, you're screwed. You're screwed. So actually, you know, then you've got to have a VR expert essentially on hand, which is expensive because you're not going to be able to pay someone, you know, minimum wage to kind of usher. So yeah, it becomes quite an expensive business model when you think of it from that point of view. So no wonder there's not much money in the industry.
Yeah. So did BFI cover the cost of the headsets and stuff going in?
No, so it was a joint venture. The BFI I can't remember exactly how much money it was, but they funded essentially the operating costs. So, you know, people's time, the license fee for the films, speaker fees, because we had like some of the filmmakers that I was curating for like come up and do a Q&A. What else did they pay for? Like room hire, that kind of thing. And then the cinema that was hosting it, so Phoenix Cinema, which is like an independent cinema in Leicester, they were the ones that bought the headsets, because they were originally going to hire them and that would have been part of the cost. But they were like, do you know what? We really believe in this technology. We think that, you know, this could be a kind of new thing for us to do, you know, on a semi-regular basis. So they luckily have quite a kind of forward-thinking on board CEO, and he agreed for them to buy the headsets. And then there was an incident with Argos where they accidentally gave them more headsets than they should have done. And then Argos were like, just keep them. So it actually worked out pretty well for them. So
that probably would have been more expensive in the long run, though, to rent them every time, would it not?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, yeah, I don't know how much the Oculus Go is going for, because I've never had to rent them. Yeah. I've only ever had to rent Gear VRs, but that worked out to be like, was it like £40 or something per set per day?
It made a lot more sense just to buy them outright.
Well, considering for that, so it was a ticketed event, so audience members had to pay £5, which is it's not a lot of money, to be honest. We could have probably charged more, but because we didn't know, and the whole point of this project was to do kind of a bit of audience research and find out what people were willing to kind of pay for. And so we charged £5 per person. If you were hiring a headset at £40, you know, you're already down 35 quid before you've even covered anyone's time. Yeah. And the room hire and the license fee and the speaker fee. I don't know. What do you think about, because obviously you're more plugged into the world of kind of online content, and especially premium online content. Obviously you work a lot with VIA, who now have their kind of their premium model. So you kind of, what's your thoughts on all that?
Well, to be honest, it's interesting, because I'm sort of, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm like a bit privy to like the deals and stuff between them and the studios and stuff whose titles they acquire. I've been trying to get hold of the analytics because I'm quite interested to see, you know, how each of them do. But
yeah,
it's quite interesting, and you know, the prices seem to vary depending. I don't know who sets the prices on their end, but I know it's like a 50-50 split down the middle. But like some of the films on there will be like $2.99. This is all in dollars, $2.99 or $4.99.
Yeah,
I think it varies depending on the what film it is. But it's interesting because it does give like a gateway for like independent creators. There's one guy on there, and I think it's just one guy on his own, because I know all of his stuff is on there and it's paid content, but it's like travel based stuff. And I only know of him because like myself, he sells stock on Pond5. So I've seen his stuff on Pond5. So basically he's sort of cobbled together like these short travel films purely for Veer out of the stock footage that he's already got. And then I think he has as a sort of series. So I think it's like a 5 or 6 part series he's got on there at the moment. And I think that's like $4.99. But that's like another additional little income for him. And it's just one guy on his own.
Yeah.
It's not like a, you know, it's not like a big studio or anything like that. So it's an interesting little gateway for like the small independent creators to get involved. And not only that, but then it's also, you've got that free promotion that comes with putting your content on there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they pump a lot of money into their marketing. And then if you're lucky, you'll get a video made by me as well to promote it.
You'll be reviewed by a really funny comedian.
Yeah. And some other guy that looks like me. But then also this is also why we have the live streams in AltSpace each week as well. They're usually to promote these paid for films. So you get like an online audience, and then you'll be invited to come and do a Q&A about it. Obviously try and ignore the trolls. but I don't know, it's kind of cool, and it's like the first thing that I've seen of that kind that's kind of, they're pretty open to like independent creators. And I think they're doing a lot of they're co-producing a lot of stuff at the moment as well,
which is exciting, because I think you would have expected that more so from the giants you know, seemingly have a lot more money in and a lot more skin in the game in terms of, you know, Oculus and Google, who used to have their kind of their platforms that would fund independence a bit more. But actually it's interesting that they seem to have killed off a little bit of that, and now it is relying on these more startup based companies to be funding independence, which is really, you know, hats off to them. I think that's really good going for them. And I like that their kind of ethos seems to be that they are fostering that kind of independent VR creator community. Yeah.
I think it's a route it makes sense for them to go down that route and to sort of help, you know, co-produce like new content. It makes a lot of sense then to sort of, you know, keep churning out regular 2D stuff. If they're creating their own stuff, then that's also going to be a draw to their own platform. Because that's the thing that we found. It's like, obviously with these videos that I've been doing from and stuff, that the whole point is to get more people to go to the platform. But it's like two very different things. So you put a video on like YouTube, or this week we've been testing out IGTV. Which is actually has more views than anything else, like organic views. But obviously getting people to go from Instagram to then having to like, you know, get their headset on, download the app, then go, you know, it's the
friction of it all, isn't it?
In between that people are kind of reluctant to do. They just want to be able to like click on the link and go straight there. Whereas, you know, at the moment we can't quite do that. So if they can help produce content that, you know, people will be intrigued by and, you know, want to watch, then it's even more reason and motivation to go and download the app and get involved.
And do you know whether they have the majority, is it a bit like YouTube and Facebook where the majority of their views still come from desktop and mobile, or do you think that they are gearing more towards being a VR, I know they're trying to be a VR first platform, but are they?
I think, you know, sorry, I have asked about this, but this was a little while ago, but I think the majority of their audience is on headset.
Okay, so that's interesting. Mm. So they are kind of becoming the go-to content consumption app on headset, which is where I think that's the problem, isn't it? Is like you say, it's so, I mean, I'm the same though. I'm lazy. Look, even like Ben Claremont, our good buddy, like, you know, it, even his latest videos that are, he says at the top, you know, they're 180, they're 3D, they're meant to be viewed in a headset. And I'm like, oh, I can't really be bothered to go and find my Go, see if it's charged up, launch it, like sit, be uncomfortable. You know, and that's
down
terrible.
To the Phoenix, they've got 20 lying around.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, spend the 40-minute drive, like getting amped, get there. Well, that's the thing. And I think that's a problem. And I think we might have touched on this in the last episode, but that's a real problem if the people working in this industry aren't motivated to spend time in a headset. So, and when I think about why that is, I think it is a convenience thing. At the moment, it's not fluid. And I was thinking about this though, because I was like, okay, well, instead of just saying, you know, what is the problem? What's the solution? What are some things that I started thinking, you know, what does that workflow look like that will make me be more inclined to watch things actually in VR? And I think what I came up with was, I think for me personally, it will be when we have glasses, not necessarily like, you know, super thin, trendy, cool looking glasses, but when we've got the equivalent of, you know, Google Glass that is actually functioning and can actually, you know, kind of like the HoloLens, but a better, more functional version of it, where actually I spend the majority of the time either at home or in the office wearing this pair of glasses, and I can move between the worlds. I can, you know, do stuff in mixed reality. I basically, you know, I was thinking like, actually, I'd be really down to have like a VR computer, as in instead of having a physical laptop, I put on, you know, a pair of glasses, a pair of haptic gloves, and in the VR world or in the AR world, I've got my computer in front of me and I can function between both. And I think that is at the point, that's when it becomes really interesting. That's when it becomes, it's frictionless because I'm already in the world. I don't need to do anything. They're already on my face.
But then but then the other thing with that is that you're not, like, especially if you're watching something in VR with those types of glasses, you're not going to get the full immersion, because you know the size of your eyes are going to still be open, so you can still just look to the side and then you're out of it again.
Well, I don't know, because
depending on the design of these glasses, I'm just writing off the design.
I think it's a really good point. Well, and this is the interesting thing. At the moment, you either have AR glasses that are exactly, that's the problem, because they've got so much light leak and they don't cover your whole face. But then you've got the mixed reality goggles, which are basically just VR with cameras on the front. I think that there will be, have you seen the mock-up leaks of Apple's AR glasses? No. Google it. Mm. See, that's what I'm talking about. Like that design looks like, they look like a bit like ski goggles. Okay. And that's what I imagine the first iteration of this actually kind of functional VR, AR, mixed reality, whatever you want to call it, glasses might look like. Because then they would have the kind of the sealed bit around your eyes, so that if you did then go into full VR, you wouldn't have the problem of light leak. But it would be kind of, you know, when they're clear, they're clear. I don't know. I mean, it's all really interesting and I'm fascinated to see. We could, you know, reference this episode in like 5 years' time and be like, ha ha ha, weren't we so wrong? You were totally right about that design flaw, Dan.
And then they'd be like, and it wasn't £4,000 either. It was £3,500.
Yeah. I'm still no good at maths, but luckily now I've got my AI assistant who can do all of that for me.
I'm seeing a lot of images for the Apple headset, and I don't know which which one is the real one. Is it one that looks like a kind of weird, like elongated Apple Watch?
I'm just googled
Apple VR headset.
Oh, are you on? Yeah. Are you on images?
It's probably none of those.
Go to all, and then just as in like the main webpage, and if the first one, Mac Rumors, Apple's AR glasses to launch in 2020. And there should be. Oh no, actually, they do. That's not the image I saw.
They really do look pretty cool.
To be fair,
what you say when I looked at it before.
No, that is not what I saw originally, but. That looks pretty dope. So
basically, you just designed this Apple VR headset, and it sounded amazing. We'll get in touch.
I'm telling them. Oh yeah, look. I'm saying like, look. You can't see what I'm seeing, but I'm sure if you listeners Google Apple mock-up AR glasses, they all look pretty cool. But yeah, that is not what I saw of the mock-ups. The mock-ups that I saw were actually just like drawings of like the patents that they'd got through.
I like what you come up with. You should get in touch with Tim Cook or Tim Apple, as he's known to his friends.
Yeah, listen, Mr. Apple. We got some serious design flaws happening here. So yeah, I mean, distribution. Yeah. Let's put a bow on this then. So I'd say for right now, if you're a 360 creator, I guess the other big thing for us to just quickly touch on is if you're thinking up original content from the beginning that you intend to sell, or, I mean, to be fair, loads of people in the 360 industry that make original content are not necessarily looking to make big bucks, because we all know that that's just not going to happen at this point. But I think the high level overview that most distributors have given me in the kind of last few months is the type of content that sells well, regardless of whether it's online for an app or LBE or licensing, is travel. Travel is a massive one, because I think still the biggest market for VR is escapism, and so simple travel content or travel doc or that kind of thing, anything that puts you in a different place than to, you know, just like spectacle wise the stuff that looks amazing in an exotic location that no one would really travel to, that's going to play really well, that's going to license really well, that's what a lot of people are looking for across all three of those kind of strands. If you're going to go down the narrative route, I've heard that documentary sells best. There's still not really a market at the moment for drama, which is something that obviously I'm really kind of interested in changing. And that's one thing that I'm working with the BFI on in England. And I know that the kind of the BFI, you know, and the more filmmaker side of things is going to happen, hopefully, in the next couple of years. I think that there will be a push towards that. But for now, it doesn't sell the best. So, those are my thoughts.
Interesting. Yeah, So, I think drama would be something that I'd like to sort of get into as well at some point.
Have you ever done any drama apart from the horror short that you did?
Not really. There's something that I'm just kind of toying around with at the moment. I'm just trying to figure out how it would work. It wouldn't be like an out and out drama. It'd be like a sort of drama comedy kind of thing.
Nice.
Trying to figure out how it would play out in 360, if that would be the right fit for it. But yeah, it certainly could be interesting. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that sort of much content in that genre about. So, but again.
Well, and I think if you are going to do drama at the moment, realistically, if you want it to kind of play to a big audience in VR, then it probably needs to be more skewed towards action and sci-fi or you know, fantasy. Yeah, yeah. There's something that appeals to the mass audience of VR. I'm obviously a massive, I mean, that goes against everything that I'm actually doing, because I've always created pieces that are not for that audience. I've always created pieces that I would want to watch. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I prefer to go with the more character driven, like comedy slash slightly more, you know, like the classic independent film vibe where not a lot happens, but there's a lot kind of said. Mm. That's my brand, but really.
Beyond mumblecore.
Just, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And rumblecore.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a minute. New genre there.
Hang on, say that
rumblecore.
Again. Say it again. Rumblecore. Can we make that a thing?
Let me just paste in it online. How do we do this? Hashtag do rumblecore. It. Yeah.
Rumblecore. Oh, do you know what we should do? I would love this, right? We should, and listeners, if you're still listening,
what you're going to say. I'm sold.
Right? Here's the thing. I want everyone listening who's interested in the kind of, creating kind of comedy drama, like character-driven stuff that's not, you know, it's not big and flashy action-y stuff. It's kind of more of that low-key indie vibe, mumblecore style. Let's get a group of us that all want to do that kind of thing, and let's set a date in summer to just meet up. Obviously, this would only work if you're based in the UK, but if you're like international, you should do this with other international VR makers. And let's just like make something. That's like the thing this. I'm really kind of keen on, is just like, let's just meet up. Let's do something super simple where we film it in a day and we edit it over like a couple of days or something.
They could all have like, it could have like an overall, like the same theme, but just told.
Like a 48-hour film competition. Like
internationally.
Yeah, we should say, I'm sold on this, and I will personally take it.
Hashtag rumblecore.
Take it upon myself. Yes, right, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go hit up all of our good friends at the various VR brands to try and rustle up some sponsorship money, and we'll have a prize, and we'll do a kind of 48-hour style filmmaking competition, and it'll be called Rumblecore, and it has to be drama, comedy, that kind of like character driven grungy vibe. Yes, oh my, I'm so sold on this idea.
So am I. Who knew that this episode was gonna end this way?
It's literally just me and you making it. Because A, no one is listening at this point, because Simplecast lied to us and no one is actually listening.
We tuned out after the $4,000 fiasco.
But That would be so amazing. Cool. Okay, I think we should do it.
I'm all over this.
Okay, right. I'm writing a note, and when I write a note, that's it.
It's law.
Rumblecore. Oh my God. I'm actually really excited about this, because I think that's the problem. When you get a bit too far down the rabbit hole with this stuff, it kind of loses its magic a little bit. It's a bit like when you become like a professional filmmaker and you make stuff for kind of commercial brands. It's like finding that time or that energy to go and actually do what you originally set out to do when you wanted to become a filmmaker actually becomes really difficult. And so, we should just set aside like a weekend where we say, listen up, 360 makers across the world. Yeah. And we could probably get Veer to host it. Like, you like upload all of your kind of like content to Veer. Definitely. And
then there could be like a alt space event to promote it,
where trolls come and tell us that our movies are all shit.
Have a nice little troll battle would be great.
Okay, I'm so sold on this idea. I'm so okay. Well, on that note, I feel like that was the perfect end.
I think so. I don't think we could do it any justice doing anything else. Bye.
That's it then.
All right, until next time.
Till next time, guys. Make sure that you, if you're still listening, that you rate and review us, even if you think it's shit, because that apparently helps
us. Yeah, good ratings, though, not bad ratings.
See you. Well, humorous. I mean, we don't want... Well, yeah, if you have bad things to say, then just DM us, like, privately. Don't give us a review.
I don't think I could give a bad review after that ending.
I mean, to be fair, everyone's hyped. Everyone's just like, exactly. Yes! I'm so into this mumblecore. People are like, what is mumblecore? That's for next time. Anyway, so leave us a review. and follow us or tweet us or Instagram us, whatever the cool kids are doing these days. Dan, what are your handles?
I am just at Daniel K. Hatton. Yeah.
Amazing. And I'm at Alex Makes VR. And we will see you. Well, we won't see you, but we will.
We won't even hear you.
Not even hear
we'll,
you.
We'll talk at you.
Talk at you. In the next one.
Yeah. I don't know what that was.
That was great.